Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
I know you mentioned yesterday you wished you had seen Chipper Jones' speech. I don't know if you taped it. We're going to go back.
I'm going to go back.
Hall of Fame inductions is one of those things. It used to be huge to me. I went to one, Jim Palmer's year. Jim Palmer, Joe Morgan, I think. As a kid, I would watch that whole day and love it. And it's one of those things that has just completely disappeared. I experienced it entirely through Twitter. Read the plaques.
What will you do this weekend?
I don't think I heard a word of the speeches. I read Joe Posnanski on Jim Tomei's speech and how he prepared. He's been given that speech in his backyard over some hedges for a long time. He went to the Hall of Fame, asked them for a lectern, and went and stood in the spot and practiced.
And Jim Tomei didn't even last through the national anthem before he started crying on Sunday when he was being inducted. And Chipper Jones, I have not seen all of it. I've seen snippets. Got rave reviews for his speech also.
I bet it was red.
I don't know.
Larry.
I don't know.
John Feinstein joins us. John, did you watch any of the speeches?
Honestly, Jonathan, I did not. I was with my family all day on Sunday. It was not in the house. I did, like Chad said, I saw some snippets, some highlights from Chipper Jones and also from Tomei, and what I saw was very good, but it was just snippets.
Is there a loss of luster to the whole day, John, or is it just one of those things that kind of has gotten shoved aside as our attention spans have become shorter and there's more going on?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, Paul. I don't think it's been shoved aside. I do think that one thing, and they've always done it this way, or at least in the last 10 years, I guess, is when you hold the ceremony while there are games ongoing, there are going to be people who are either going to watch games or be at games or who will forget that the Hall of Fame ceremony is on Sunday afternoon. Seems to me in the old days, the ceremony was on an off day. There was no baseball and there was an exhibition game in Cooperstown. That's my memory, at least from years and years ago. And now they have it on television, so it's not as special to be there, perhaps, as it used to be. But I think this was a very distinguished Hall of Fame class, and one that certainly deserved our attention.
John, when I saw all the news about Bryce Harper, I could not wait to talk to you about this, to get the local perspective out of Washington, D.C. with this story where they were making him available for trade, but then deciding, oh, we like our team where it is, when they couldn't get the trade that they wanted. What do you make of this mess right now with the Nationals and sort of them being in limbo with Bryce Harper and what they are moving forward?
The only way they were going to trade Bryce Harper, Chad, was if Scott Boras told his buddy Mike Rizzo, he's not re-signing with you. He wants out of Washington, or he knows he wants to play for the Yankees or go back to the West Coast. That was the only way they were going to trade him, if they felt they were going to be put in a position where they were just going to get draft picks in return for him when he left as a free agent. They're only 5.5 games out of first place, even though they played very poorly. They're under 500. Phillies have lost 4 in a row. The Braves have not played especially well of late. I know they've won a couple in a row now, but they had lost, I think at one point they lost 6 out of 9 before they won these last two. The race is very salvageable for them in spite of their very mediocre play. And I just don't think there was any way they were going to trade Harper unless, as I said, they knew he wasn't going to come back next year. Because they don't want to lose Bryce Harper. I mean, for all the talk about, the local media in Washington is, oh, we really don't need him that much, and we've got all these great young players like Soto and others, and you know, we can let Bryce Harper leave. That's a bunch of hooey. They need Bryce Harper. He's the face of the franchise. the way people reacted when he won the home run derby, as meaningless as I think the home run derby is, was certainly proof of that. And even though he's having a down year, he's got 25 homers and 60 RBI. He's the best power hitter in their lineup by far. So, and remember, he's still only 26 years old. So you don't want to lose that player unless you have no choice.
John, you look at that division right now, and clearly the Nationals have a ton of talent. Going into the season, they should have been the NL East division champs. They still have a chance to win that division. But when you right. look at the Braves and the Phillies and even the Mets to an extent with their young roster, and the Braves and Phillies are a year ahead of schedule, they're only going to get better. How difficult is that decision now for Rizzo to decide, are we an aging team that sort of aged out of the window to win this division consistently, or are we a team that can compete every year now with the Braves and Phillies? Because there is some value in deciding right away what you are, whether that's rebuilding or in the mix every year.
I don't think Mike Rizzo's ego would ever let him admit that he needs to rebuild, because that would imply that he's made mistakes along the way with this franchise, and he has made mistakes along the way with this franchise. And I think that that Rizzo believes, because they do have a good farm system, they do have some good young players coming along, that there's no reason why they can't contend every year, even though, as you said, Chad, the Braves and the Phillies are ahead of schedule. They're clearly good young teams. They should get better in the years to come. The Nationals are not going to walk to the division title the way they have on several occasions in recent years. You know, when they've won, it's interesting, when they've won the division, they've won it going away. And when they've been in a tight race, they haven't been able to finish. And a couple of years ago, you remember when Rizzo made that awful trade for Jonathan Papelbon, that completely ruined their season. So, but I don't think to be a seller would be to admit, we've made mistakes, the Phillies and Braves have gone past us, we have to regroup and try and see if we can rebuild, as you said, for next year or the year after. Mike Rizzo's ego won't allow him to do that, because Mike Rizzo thinks he invented baseball.
John, in the AL East, I feel like I'm always rooting for a Red Sox-Yankees matchup in the playoffs, but maybe this year more than ever. The Red Sox are 42 games over 500. The Yankees are 30 games over 500. Just dominating that division.
The Orioles are 32 games under 500.
Yes.
Both.
It would be amazing to see those two great teams this season match up in the playoffs.
Well, and obviously the TV networks would love it, because the Yankees and Reds, if they could televise the Yankees and Red Sox every single day of the season, they would do that. But you're right, Chad. They're both very good this year. I think the Red Sox, at least at the moment, look to me like the better team. Not just because they're six games up. They just look to me like the better team. I think the top of their rotation is better than the Yankees' top of their rotation. The Yankees have made these trades for pitchers in the last few days, you know, getting Happ and getting Lynn. Happ and Lynn are fourth and fifth guys. You know, I know Happ was on the All-Star team this year, but is he the guy you want to get the ball in Fenway Park, you know, for game four or game five or whatever of a league championship series? I don't think so. But it would certainly be a fascinating series. Although I'm thinking now, I just realized they probably wouldn't meet the LCS, because assuming the Yankees come out of the wild card game and the Red Sox have the best record, they would actually play in a division series, which is best of five. And that would put a lot of pressure on. And again, I still think it'd be advantage Red Sox because of the top of their rotation and because they're so much better defensively.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
We were talking a bit ago about the Philadelphia Eagles and how they came out of their meeting with the officials very confused about the initiating contact with the helmet rule. NFL finally kind of clarified what a catch is, and it seems like maybe they're going to offset that by complicating what contact is legal. When Malcolm Jenkins and Nigel Branham are coming out of that meeting saying they don't know what's what, and the officials who've put together film don't have a unified vision on how a certain play would have been called in the past, what are players supposed to make of that?
You know, the NFL has had trouble with officiating ever since Mike Pereira retired to the TV booth. They just have not had, in my opinion, the right leadership in place. The rules changes they've made have been confusing. I mean, the catch rule was more complicated than splitting the atom. They're telling us now they figured it out. We'll see. But to me, the thing about leading with the helmet is very simple. It shouldn't be complicated. You lead with the helmet. The complications come from saying, well, if the receiver's not helpless, then it's not a penalty. There was a play in the Chiefs-Titans game last year that you guys probably remember. Late in the first half, when Travis Kelce catches the ball over the middle, and he's being tackled from behind, and as he's going down, one of the Titans DBs, you guys will remember who it was.
Norris Searson.
That's right. Goes right at him with the helmet. And he's knocked silly. He's knocked in the next week. And he's out for the rest of the game, which was a huge loss for the Chiefs. And I'm not saying that the officials necessarily got the call wrong, because the rule is unclear. The rule said, what they said was, because he was going down, it was not incidental contact, but that he was not diving at his head, that he was diving somewhere else, and because he was going down, it ended up being helmet to helmet. Well, if you're leading with your helmet, I don't care if a guy's going down, I don't care if he's helpless or not helpless, it should be a penalty for leading with your helmet. It's that simple. You don't have to tackle with your helmet. It's only in the last 20 years, because the NFL promoted all these big hits and these videos, and ESPN would show the 10 top hits of the week, and they all, for years, were helmet to helmet. And when I grew up, when you learned to tackle, you didn't tackle with your helmet, you tackle with your arms. And you tried to bring somebody, you wrap them up. That was the phrase. You wrap the guy up. Then, as time went by, it became, okay, you make contact any way you can make contact. And the NFL still hasn't gotten it right. College is much closer to having it right. College, they say, if you lead with a helmet, it is a penalty, and then they go to replay to determine if you're thrown out of the game or not. But it's absolutely a 15-yard penalty. The NFL needs to get a lot closer to that.
John, incredible story out of Akron yesterday, the opening of the I Promise School, where LeBron James and his foundation approached the Akron School Board about assisting in the creation of a school designed to help at-risk kids who are lagging behind in their studies and struggling at home. And the detail that this, everything that I read is incredible, the detail that went into planning exactly what opened yesterday.
Yeah, it's very cool, Jonathan. There's no question about it. I think it's fair to say that LeBron James has come a long way from the decision having nothing to do with basketball. I think he's grown and matured as a person in terms of his awareness of what he can do for, in this case, kids at risk in the town where he grew up. He's not the first person to do this. Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf opened the school years ago in Las Vegas. David Robinson has had a school in San Antonio for years, again, that he has funded. Mike Krzyzewski has a program named after his mother in Durham, where they take kids and put them in a program specific to getting them into college. So this is not a first by any means, but it is absolutely a very cool thing that LeBron James is doing, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for it.
Well, I think, too, he's also paid in the past for 1,000 kids to attend college, LeBron has. I just like the fact that he's not all about the talk. He actually walks the walk as well.
No, I agree.
And that's refreshing.
Yeah, no, you're right, Jonathan. And, most athletes have foundations of some kind. Some of them are very real and do very good things. Some of them are there just for tax write-off purposes. And some of them are there just so the athlete can say, I'm giving back in some way, and he pays little attention to what's going on and leaves it for his employees to run. LeBron James is clearly not in that category. He's clearly in the category where he has been very involved with the charitable work that he's done. And like I said, I think he's really grown in a lot of ways in the last 8 to 10 years.
John, are you as curious as I am to see if Jerry Jones actually follows through with this gag order that's been placed on him to not discuss the anthem policy?
Yeah, because he always listens to the league when they say shh.
It's funny, reading that story the other day. We'll see. We should have like an over-under on how long Jerry can actually keep his mouth shut. I think what's happening here is the league has said to him, please, Jerry, just keep your mouth shut until we work something out with the players. Because every time he opens his mouth and says, you know, they're going to all stand outside and they're going to toe the line, and then his son, the classic born on third base guy, comes out and says, you know, we'll suspend guys without pay if they don't stand for the anthem. All that does is ratchet up the rhetoric in the room where the player, the union and the owners are trying to work something equitable out. Now, the owners handled this poorly from the beginning, making a unilateral announcement on a new policy. You know what, guys? If they had not said a word, if they had just left the existing policy in place, you know how many guys wouldn't have stood for the national anthem on opening day? Maybe 3, 4? Do you know how many? Here's a question for you. How many NFL players did not stand for the national anthem on the Sunday before President Trump delivered his rant in Alabama last September?
Not many.
There's six, maybe?
Six, Chad. Exactly, six. So if people would just tone down the rhetoric and stop trying to tell people what to do, just leave them to their own devices, very few of them are going to continue the protest. Every time somebody ratchets up the rhetoric and says, you will do this, you will do that, how do any of us react to being told what to do as adults, regardless of what the subject is? Now the NFL has got to come out with some kind of compromise policy, and I hope they get it right so that the players don't feel so dissed that they have to respond by kneeling or staying in the locker room or whatever it might be.
John, here's what amazes me about the NFL. For a league that requires its players the ultimate level of accountability, the contracts aren't guaranteed. They can cut guys for not performing. They can cut guys for any reason if you're not up to snuff. They have the least amount of accountability when it comes to themselves. How are guys not getting publicly fired within the NFL for all of the botched things that have happened? The anthem policy, not being clear on the helmet rule. Everything that happens, that it's in their control, they screw it up. There are no consequences for them. I mean, Jerry Jones, love it or hate it, at least he has a clear anthem policy. I mean, there's no ambiguity with what he's saying about what he expects from his players. And what's the league's response to that? Shut up, Jerry, because you actually have a clear policy. I get sick and tired of people within the NFL seemingly not facing any consequences in that office in New York City.
Well, here's the deal, Chad. Go back to the mishandling of the Ray Rice situation and again, the policy on domestic abuse and things like that. Roger Goodell has done a very good job in helping the owners make more money. He negotiated a very owner-friendly CBA in 2011. He got it done before exhibition games started, which is when the owners would have started to lose money. He's negotiated very good television contracts, which isn't that hard to do because the NFL's always dealing from a point of power because none of the networks can afford to lose the NFL. We saw what happened at CBS when they lost it back in the 90s. So in some ways, his job is set up for him, but he's done what the owners want to do. And to them, the issues that we are talking about, player safety with the helmet rule, PR stuff with the anthem, although the fact that the president's been involved has made it more important to them. The fact that that kind of stuff gets screwed up is minor to the owners compared to the issues about how much money they're making. During the lockout in 2011, I was talking to an NFL owner, and I said to him, you guys cannot declare poverty the way David Stern did during the NBA lockout, the way Gary Bettman did during the NHL lockout. We've got to do this, otherwise the whole league is going to go under. I said, you guys can't do that. You're making too much money off of television. And he said, you're right. We're not trying to say that. We do make money. Everybody knows we make money. We want to make more money. That's the bottom line. The bottom line.
John Feinstein, normally every Monday with us, nice enough to rearrange the schedule a bit because of Titans training camp. John, thanks so much for the visit today.
Okay, always my pleasure, Jonathan. Talk to you guys next week.
Yep.